It was strange how weary Hani felt now, as she and Owa made their way back around the base of the mountain towards the secret valley. While they had followed the trail of Namchild and Shasa, she had felt as though she could run forever, as though she were a young woman again, imbued with boundless energy and strength in her concern for the safety of the two she loved as dearly as she loved her ancient husband. Now, however, when she had turned her back upon them forever, she felt the full weight of her age, and it pressed her down so that her usual alert swinging trot was reduced to a heavy plod, and the weariness ached in her legs and up her spine. In front of her, Owa moved as slowly, and she sensed the effort that each pace cost him. In the time that it had taken the sun to rise a hand span over the horizon, both of them had been deprived of the force and purpose that made survival in their harsh world possible. Once more they had suffered terrible bereavement, but this time they did not have the will to rise above it. Ahead of her, Owa halted and sank down on his haunches. She had never in all the long years seen him so beaten, and when she squatted beside him, he turned his head slowly to her.
"Old grandmother, I am tired," he whispered. "I would like to sleep for a long time. The sun hurts my eyes."
He held up his hand to shield them.
"It has been a long, hard road, old grandfather, but we are at peace with the spirits of our clan, and Namchild is safe with her own kind. We can rest a while now."
Suddenly she felt the grief come up her throat, and she choked upon it. But there were no tears. It seemed that all the moisture had dried from her wizened old frame. There were no tears, but the need to weep was like an arrow in her chest, and she rocked on her heels and made a little humming sound in her throat to try to alleviate the pain, so she did not hear the horses coming. It was Owa who dropped his hand from his eyes and cocked his head to the tremor on the still morning air, and when Hani saw the fright in his eyes, she listened and heard it also.
"We are discovered," said Owa, and for a moment Hani felt drained of even the will to run and to hide. "They are close already." The same resignation was in his eyes, and it spurred the old woman. She pulled him to his feet. "On the open ground they will run us down with the ease of a cheetah, taking a lame gazelle." She turned and looked to the mountain. They were at the foot of the scree slope, with scattered brush and loose rock ramping gently up to the mountain's bulk.
"If," Hani whispered, "if we could reach the top, no horse could follow us."
"It is too high, too steep," Owa protested. "There is a way."
With a bony finger, Hani pointed out the faint track that zigzagged up the vast, bare, rocky flank of the mountain.
"Look, old grandfather, see the spirits of the mountain are showing us the way."
"Those are Klipspringer," Owa muttered. The two tiny chamois-like antelope, alarmed by the approach of horsemen in the forest below, went prancing lightly up the barely discernible track.
"They are not mountain spirits," Owa repeated,
watching the nimble brown animals fly almost straight up the tall rock face.
"I say there are spirits in the guise of antelope."
Hani dragged him towards the scree slope.
"I say they are showing us the way to escape our enemies. Hurry, you stupid and argumentative old man. There's no other way open to us."
She took his hand in hers, and together they hopped and skipped from boulder to boulder, climbing with the awkward agility of a pair of ancient baboons up the tumbled rock of the scree slope. However, before they reached the base of the cliff, Owa was dragging back on her hand and gasping with pain, reeling weakly as she urged him on.
"My chest," he cried and staggered. "In my chest an animal is eating my flesh. I can feel its teeth."
And he fell heavily between two boulders.
"We cannot stop,"
Hani pleaded as she stood over him.
"We must go on."
She tried to drag him up.
"There is such pain," he wheezed. "I can feel its teeth ripping out my heart."
With all her strength, she heaved him into a sitting position and at that moment there was a faint shout from the foot of the scree slope below them. "They have seen us," Hani said, looking down at the two horsemen as they rode out of the forest. "They are coming after us." She watched them jump down from their horses, tether them, and then come at the slope. One was a black man, and the other had a head that shone like sunlight off a sheet of still water. And as they came on to the slope, they shouted again a fierce and jubilant sound, like the clamour of hunting hounds when they first take the scent. That sound roused Owa, and with Hani's help he came unsteadily to his feet, clutching at his chest. His lips had blanched, and his eyes were like those of a mortally wounded gazelle. They terrified her as much as the shouts of the men below. "We must go on." Half carrying, half dragging him, she led him to the base of the cliff. "I cannot do it." His voice was so faint that she had to put her ear to his lips. "I cannot go up there." "You can," she told him stoutly. "I will lead you. Place your feet where I place mine." And she went on to the rock, onto the steep pathway that the klipspringer had marked with their sharp, pointed hooves, and behind her the old man came on unsteadily. 100 feet up, they found a ledge, and it shielded them from the men below. They toiled upwards, clinging to the harsh, abrasive surface with their fingertips, and the open drop below them seemed to steady Owa. He climbed more determinedly. Once, when he hesitated and swayed outwards from the wall, she reached back and caught his arm and held him until the fit of vertigo passed. "Follow me," she told him. "Do not look down, old grandfather. Watch my feet and follow me." They went upwards, higher and still higher, and although the plain opened below them, yet the hunters were hidden beneath the sheer of the cliff. "Only a little further," she told him. "See, there is the crest just a little further, and we will be safe. Here, give me your hand." And she reached out to help him over a bad place where the drop opened below them, and they had to step across the void. Hani looked down between her feet, and she saw them again, dwarfed by distance and foreshortened and misshapen by the overhead perspective. The two hunters were still at the base of the cliff, directly below her, looking up at her. The white man's face shone like a cloud, so strangely pale and yet so malignant, she thought. He lifted his arms and pointed at her with a long staff he carried. Hani had never seen a rifle before, and made no effort to hide herself as she stared down at him. She knew she was far out of range of an arrow from even the most powerful bow, and, unafraid, she leaned out from the narrow ledge for a better view of her enemy. She saw the white man's extended arms jerk, and a little feather of white smoke flew from the tip of his staff. She never heard the rifle shot, for the bullet arrived before the sound. It was a soft, lead-nosed Mauser bullet, and it entered low down in the front of her stomach and passed obliquely upwards, traversing her body, tearing through her bowels and her stomach, up through one lung and out through her back a few inches to one side of the spinal column. The force of the impact flung her backwards against the rock wall, and then her lifeless body bounced loosely forward and spun out over the edge. Owa cried out and reached for her as she went over. He touched her with his fingertips before she fell away from him, and he teetered on the brink of the precipice. "My life," he called after her. "My little heart." And the pain and the grief were too intense to be borne. He let his body sway outwards, and as it passed its centre of gravity, he cried softly, "I am coming with you, old grandmother, to the very end of the journey." And he let himself plunge, unresisting, into the void, and the wind ripped at him as he fell, but he made not another sound. Not ever.